And welcome back to Dad's on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our guest today is Dr. Jennifer Harmon, who is the Associate Professor of Psychology at Colorado State University in the USA, and co-author of Parents Acting Badly, How Institutions and Societies Promote the Alienation of Children from Their Loving Families. Jennifer, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on here.
So, Jennifer, what motivated you to write this book about parents acting badly?
Well, I like to say it's just from pure curiosity, but it was sadly initiated and motivated from personal experience. I used to see alienation happening in people around me and often think, oh, that's just a high-conflict divorce, or, you know, those are just people who can't get along. And it wasn't until it happened to me and some other people really close to me that I started seeing that it was very different than what I initially assumed. And so I began researching a little bit more about, and I learned what it was called, parental alienation. And then I wanted to learn more about trying to explain and understand what my experience was about. And the more I learned, the more I realized I didn't know, and the more that I realized other researchers still don't know yet. So that inspired some of the early thinking that I had on the topic, and it led to the book.
The title is Parents Acting Badly. Do you see any differences between the way men act and women act when they're affected by parental alienation?
A little bit. I mean, a lot of the behaviors that parents exhibit are similar. However, the way that they're able to get away with the alienation varies because it involves manipulating other people to accomplish their aims. Not just the children, but it involves manipulating neighbors, teachers, friends, mental health providers. And so in order to be effective at it, the way that mothers and fathers alienate varies because they play off stereotypes that we have about mothers and fathers. And so that's why it kind of looks a little bit different when we see the way that they do it.
Well, the subtitle refers to institutions and societies. Do you think our parents and the children are actually being abused by the system itself?
I think so. I mean, the institutions that are in place kind of represent the kind of global thinking and entrenched thinking of people. We know they're very antiquated, and they take a long time to catch up with the way that people's attitudes change. So, for example, gender norms in many parts of the world have become more egalitarian, but the courts and other policies and legislative policies don't reflect that quite yet. And I don't know when they will, but it takes a long time for those to catch up. And so in a lot of ways, the systems aren't that responsive to societal change. And societal change itself takes a long time to happen. But so in that case, it ends up hurting, you know, families because they don't often reflect advances in science. They don't reflect policies. Don't reflect what we know about what's in the best interest of children. I know that research in parental alienation is has been characterized as being in its infancy. There's still so much we don't know, but what we do know is enough to say we need to take this seriously and we need to make some changes.
Do you see it as being a major problem today that's actually getting worse, or how are we traveling?
That's something I think a lot about because we don't know if it's just progressively becoming an epidemic or if it's always been this way and we're just starting to call it out for what it is. I think it's probably a little bit of both. I mean, I remember when I was young, my parents divorced, and they, you know, there were always some things that they said that could be characterized as alienating. It didn't result in alienation, which is kind of the ultimate outcome of those behaviors and the impact it has on a child. But I think because divorce is a lot more common today than it was even 20, 30 years ago, and there's rises in narcissism. There's a lot of other things that are happening in society that I think are making it kind of really reach a point where there's millions around the world being affected by this.
Yes, it always amazes me that the symptoms seem to be the same in whether it's the US, England, Australia, New Zealand. Everyone seems to have a similar sort of experience with parental alienation.
Yeah, and I was amazed when we started doing this research that, I've done a lot of qualitative and quantitative research. And with qualitative research, the goal is to try to capture as many experiences as possible when you're interviewing people. And by the time we reached about 20 or 30 interviews from people in Australia, the U.S., Canada, Norway, Amsterdam, Trinidad and Tobago, it was the same story over and over. Mm. I mean, everybody, the little small details were different, but it was shocking to me that we reached this point, even 20 interviews in, that all you had to do was kind of change out the names, and it was so similar. And that's what made my co-author and I really look at, there has to be something more systemic about this. This has to be something bigger than just individual conflict in families, that there's something bigger in society that's making this happen so similarly across cultures.
And the other surprising thing about it is that so few people seem to know about it, or others want to deny its existence, but you're finding it all over the world in great numbers.
Yeah. Yes. I think, maybe it comes to where people don't know what it is until it's happened to them. They often think it's just sort of, a custody battle at divorce. But that's not how alienation works. And the alienation often, it's almost a lifelong situation where different events over time can exasperate. It ebbs and flows depending on what's happening. It's unrelenting. And so I think until it happens to people, they don't really understand that it just doesn't go away once the divorce is over or the separation or the relationship ends. And I think now that people are starting to talk more about it and people are starting to become aware of what it's called.
And it is different from a situation where perhaps some rejection of a parent might even be justified, if the parent is particularly violent or treats that child badly when the child visits. But you're talking about something different, aren't you?
Absolutely, yes. What you're describing there is estrangement, where, there's a lot of cases where there's a parent with a mental illness or that's severe and interferes with their parenting ability, because there's a lot of people with mental illness who are fully capable of being good parents. But there are some situations where there is violence or there are real limitations of that parent. In that case, what we call that is estrangement. But the difference being is that with estrangement, it doesn't involve the other parent. So estrangement really is about one parent's inability to parent or abusiveness interfering with the child's relationship with them. So it's a direct kind of one-on-one parent-child relationship where that parent's skills or lack thereof is influencing or negatively influencing the relationship with a child. So that's estrangement, and it's independent of everybody else. So when you're talking about alienation is a little bit different. Here's where the other parent would become involved and maybe take that behavior of that parent and exaggerate it or tell the children things about that parent that they shouldn't even really know about. Even if that parent is dangerous or abusive, the child doesn't need to know that if they're safe, right? So as long as they're safe, the child, it just hurts their feelings about their self-esteem if they feel there's something wrong with the other parent, even if it's true. And so here's where it becomes really hard, I think, especially for mental health professionals, to really understand what alienation is and how it's different than estrangement, and really kind of pulling apart how, at what point a parent uses that information or that situation or the limitations of that parent against them. And so that's kind of where we need a lot more research to really understand that better. But that's really how you can really at least clearly distinguish between the two.
There seems to be some reluctance to saying, look, it's one parent acting badly. You often hear, oh, it must be on both sides. It must be both of them are doing something. Would your research indicate that that's not always the case, that it's not always both parents?
Yes. Many times it's not. Some of the parents have admitted when we've interviewed them that they have maybe sometimes said things that weren't great about the other parent, but oftentimes they admit it's because they were sort of at their wit's end and they didn't know what else to say to defend against lies, for example. So I can think of a few parents, for example, that said that their children would come to them with lies that the other parent had told them, such as that they were abusive or that they hit their mother or father. And the other parent is then left in a position of saying, well, that's not true, right, if it's not true. Unfortunately, then the child has to sit there with that information and try to figure out who's telling the truth. Mm. And so oftentimes parents, a lot of the parents we interviewed were very sensitive to how they phrased things to their children because they saw what was happening in the other home, you know, with the other parent. And they were very, very careful about how they said things. So if they knew that the other parent told them some lies and the child confronted them, the healthier way to respond that a lot of these parents used were like, well, that's one version of the truth, or that's one recollection, or that's one version of what happened. So it kind of takes the pressure off the child to not make a choice about who's telling the truth, but it allows them to understand and hopefully at some point gain some, you know, critical thinking that maybe there's more to the story. But we had some parents who admitted to doing some alienating behaviors themselves, or if anything, they were overly cautious about it. Like one parent I interviewed said that he had taken his daughter's phone from her that was sent from the mother because while with him for just the weekend, she would be getting text messages and phone calls nonstop, like every 10, 20 minutes. So it finally got to the point it was interfering with his time so much. He said, you can call your mom once today. You can call her once tomorrow, and then you'll see her the next day. But I really want to enjoy my time with you. And this was interpreted by him as potentially alienating his child. However, it's really not. It's protecting his time and stopping the alienator from interfering with his relationship. And so, to think that both parents are doing it, I think, is kind of a really gross misunderstanding about really what's happening. And it's really a bullying situation. It's really a abusive situation where you have one person who's the target. Many times when you see domestic violence relationships, it's not often two people attacking each other. It's usually where there's one abuser and one victim. Both are obviously feeding into the problem, but that's not usually how aggression works in relationships. And that's no different than what's happening here.
And when things go wrong, the child might change. We're going to take a short break now. This is a song by the Beach Boys. It's called Caroline No.
Caroline, no.
That was Caroline Noe by the Beach Boys. And we're speaking today with Dr. Jennifer Harmon, who is the Associate Professor of Psychology at Colorado State University in the United States and the co-author of Parents Acting Badly, How Institutions and Societies Promote the Alienation of Children from Their Loving Families. So, Jennifer, what are the first signs of parental alienation? Are there warning signs before it actually gets a real grip?
That's a great question, because a lot of the parents who are alienated, when I ask them in our work, how did they know, or what are the first signs that they discovered? And a lot of them said they had no idea until it was really bad. But what people could recall is that there were often kind of negative comments made about their parenting while in the relationship, like undermining authority in the relationship with the child, or taking time and pulling the children away from the other parent. So there were some parents who the alienated parent would be left at home while the alienator would take the kids out to dinner or go on vacations or on trips without the other parent, even though the parent wanted to go. And so there's kind of a grit, and those are the more extreme, vivid ones, but the earlier signs kind of are, you know, showing sort of this undermining of the other parent and not allowing them access to the child or interfering with their alone time with the child. And then oftentimes it turns to comments made to friends and neighbors, you know, to try to plant seeds that the other parent isn't as effective or is abusive. And then that starts to then escalate from there.
So the parental alienation can start when it's still an intact family, when everyone's still together.
Yes. In fact, we don't know yet how often it exists in intact families that don't separate. We do know, my co-author published a paper a few years ago, and they found that in a sample of college students, that about a third of the students they interviewed or who they surveyed reported that their parents engaged in alienating behaviors and they were still together. So these behaviors still happen in relationships. And the question is, do those intact relationships where this is happening, are they eventually going to divorce? Is it just sort of a sign that it's heading that way? Or is it just sort of a dysfunction of some intact families? We don't know that yet, but we do know it's highly prevalent, even in intact marriages.
So when the parental alienation has had its effect, what would you see typically with the children in that relationship?
For the children that do succumb to it or kind of believe it, hook, line, and sinker, one thing that we often see, or what people focus on, is often the distance from the alienated parent. And they often look at that and think, oh, that parent must not be very good because that child doesn't want to be with them. Mm-hmm. But really what the symptoms that you can really see is that that child is often very enmeshed or has an overly close relationship with the alienator. And sadly, most people around that family would assume that that means that that parent is very loving and is the healthier parent, when in actuality, that person is usually the alienator and the most toxic of the parents. Because that enmeshment, that we call it, it makes the child feel as if they are that parent's equal, that they are their best friend, that they, and it elevates that child to a position of authority in that family that is not healthy for them and at their stage of development. Even though the child often likes that position because it's a privileged position, they're given a lot of information that they shouldn't be given, and they like that because it makes them feel grown up and in the know, even though it's often very biased and selected information that they're being given. So that's kind of one of the signs that you really see. And then oftentimes then the children will dislike the parent, the alienated parent, for reasons that are oftentimes really trivial and wouldn't really manifest in really negative feelings. You know, for example, like forgetting, I don't know, a gift or something, even though maybe that never even happened, but the child would then blow that out of proportion as truth that parent isn't good. And then the children will usually, who are alienated, experience no guilt in their feelings. And that's a real sign that alienation has happened, because usually when children have even a very abusive parent or a parent who has estranged them in some way, a lot of times they still feel ambivalence because they still love them, and they feel conflicted. You know, they might have a lot of negative feelings, but they also have positive feelings. But in alienation, you don't often see that. Mm-hmm. You see, usually the child has very negative feelings, and they see the world in very black and white terms, and they oftentimes have very kind of distorted perceptions of the past and what's happened. And their stories often change about the past, or they evolve over time, and details kind of slip in and change.
Richard Gardner, I think, was one of the early people promoting the idea of parental alienation. He came up with 8 behaviors. Is that those 8 behaviors that he identified, are they still the ones that people look for?
Yeah. So he has kind of a lasting legacy, at least in this new field of research. And some people have developed ways to try to screen or assess whether alienation is happening. And so his 8 symptoms have been used to create those kinds of scales or measures. And there's been other researchers who've developed other ways of doing that. We don't really have a really good, reliable measure yet. I think we're starting to get closer as people, other researchers are jumping on board and starting to study this phenomenon. But his symptoms have been sort of the basis for some of the ways that we measure it today.
Well, I think the great service that you and your co-author have provided is that you are, as someone described it, providing a social and cultural lens to better understand this devastating problem. And I mean, it's not just individual parents, even though they feel they're the only ones in the world. This is a major cultural issue, and I wish you all the best in your ongoing research in this area with your colleagues. But Jennifer, we've reached the stage in the program where I ask my guests if they'd like to pick a song. Would you like to pick a song and tell us why you picked it?
Yeah, I picked Constellations by Jack Johnson. It's just always been one of my favorite songs for the melody, but I also like the message in it, is that you can lean back with your family and just feel kind of the connectedness of your family in a relaxed vacation atmosphere, and connect the constellations in a way that makes sense or create a new meaning for your family. And so I like to kind of, when things are going bad, and even in my own relationships and family dynamics, to think of that and think about a special time that you can create with your family that's unique to you.
It's a beautiful song, so here we go. Constellations by Jack Johnson.
Light was leaving in the west, it was blue. The children's laughter sang, skipping just like the stones they threw. The voices echoed across the waves. It's getting late. And it was just another night with the sunset and a moonrise, not so far behind, to give us just enough light to lay down underneath the stars. Listen to Papa's translations of the stories across the sky. We drew our own constellations. West winds often last too long, but when they calm down, nothing ever feels the same. Sheltered under the Cremonti tree, waiting for the passing rain. Clouds keep moving to uncover the sea. stars above us, chasing the day away to find the stories that we sometimes need. Listen close enough, all else fades away. Just another night with a sunset and a moonrise, not so far behind to give us just enough light to lay down underneath the stars. Listen to all the translations of the stories across the sky, to drew our own constellation.
And that was Constellations by Jack Johnson. So it just remains for me today to thank our very special guest, Dr. Jennifer Harmon. Jennifer, thank you very much for being on the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email and we'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. So that's it for this week. We'll be back next week with another show on Dads on the Air.